Good morning. It's 18 minutes after 8 o'clock. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. Joining me in the studio this morning is my second Sitka Fellow of the Week, Pete Moran, is here. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning.
And you are, I guess you guys are in the third week of your residency.
Yeah, time flies, I guess.
Ready. Time flies when you're busy, anyway. Pete, you're from upstate New York?
That's right, yep. Just outside of Syracuse, New York.
And how did you hear about the Sitka Fellows Program?
I think it might have been a Google search. I'm kind of embarrassed to admit that. Everyone else has a better story, but I thought Alaska would be a cool place to come, and there was a residency, so here I am.
You went for it. And your biography is, it's one of the more interesting sort of, I don't know, the contrast of things you've done in the background. You've got an engineering degree from Cornell, but then you went on to Yale to get a Master of Fine Arts. When all your colleagues from Cornell went deeper into engineering, you somehow spun out.
Yeah, that's true. And they all have nice cars now. I don't have one of those. But somehow engineering wasn't really satisfying. It wasn't quite doing it. There were some questions it couldn't quite answer. And then I started making artwork and reading philosophy, and that was just a bad idea.
Yeah.
Now you can't go back.
but does engineering somehow inform your sculpture?
Yeah, I think so, certainly. Once you're trained in that way, or once even you sort of select yourself for something like that, engineering, you kind of use it a little bit no matter what you're up to. And I think that is actually a way of asking the same question that I usually ask in my engineering practice, but also in the artwork. Just a simple, like, well, how's this work? What's going on here? And you can ask that about, like, a pickup truck just the same as you can ask that about a sculpture that you find interesting or anything you see, really.
I want to imagine that your sculpture has kind of very mechanical sort of aspect to it, some sort of Rube Goldberg types of machines, but this is not really the case at all. Right?
No, not at all. Yeah, I wish I had a really easy answer for why that is. Maybe I don't have so much faith in Rube Goldberg to save us. I don't think he's going to come through and really be our champion to fix the problems that we have in the world. It might be something simpler, something even a little bit dumber that we need.
Okay. I was going to say, and we'll post a picture. It'd be interesting to see where you've gone sculpturally. It's hard in a radio interview, but basically your sculpture is a way of answering questions, if I'm hearing you right.
Yeah, it's even a way of asking questions.
Okay.
That is kind of a funny thing, right? To have a sculptor on a radio show is kind of a little twist in the action, but most of the work that I make is really pretty simple. Oftentimes it'll be something like three objects together, three things you've seen before, and somehow through the manipulation of space or kind of playing with how they are set up, all of a sudden they just seem a little bit different, and it's a chance to look at them again and see them maybe for what they are instead of the way you usually use them, or see the relationships that are already in them, or the way that they're talking to you. Oftentimes I'll start with something and just think, wow, that's pretty shiny, and I like that, and I have to be embarrassed to admit that since it was shiny, I like it, but that's kind of fascinating too, and we can go from there.
Yeah, I don't think that's all that unusual. You know, a composer sometimes, you know, might just start with just a simple arrangement of notes and just, you know, continue to play with the sound till the melody emerges. I could see the same thing happening in sculpture easily. You've got studio space over at the Sheldon Jackson campus.
Yeah, they've given us great studios, huge studios, north-facing light. I mean, it's kind of a dream setup, and there's tons of stuff to work with, tons of things to look at in Sitka.
And has anything begun to sort of coalesce for you over there?
I think the sort of way I work is usually taking a really good look around and sort of trying to settle into a rhythm of a place and seeing what really fascinates me. And so now I've slowly started to amass a collection in this big studio, slowly filling it up. And I think the next part will be getting rid of most of the stuff that I brought in so far.
Okay. I want to, Pete, the geeky popular mechanics side of me can't, you know, let you go without talking about some of the engineering stuff you've done too, because it's not like you you know, studied engineering and then said, ah, you know, to heck with this, I'm going to be an artist. You really are sort of committed to engineering as an endeavor, and you worked on an air vehicle for Sikorsky Aircraft, an air vehicle.
That's what they call it in the business. Sometimes they call helicopters airplanes, too. I kind of like that
one. What kind of air vehicle? Was it anything super secret, or was it just an ordinary plane?
I'm very pleased to say that I wrote Appendix H to the ADS 33E flight qualification manual. After I worked there for about 3 months, I asked my boss, I said, this seems kind of important. Why are you letting me do it? I don't really know that much. And he assured me that no one would ever read it. So it's that sort of complication in engineering. I worked pretty hard on that report. Could be good, could be bad. I don't think anyone's read it yet, so we'll see.
As an island dweller and frequent air traveler, somehow I'm not reassured to hear you say that people aren't reading the manuals. But then also, and I did look this up online, the DARPA Urban Challenge, you and mm-hmm. a team from Cornell designed a driverless vehicle.
Yeah, that's right. It was in response to a Department of Defense funding proposal. And they kind of said, hey, whoever you are, if you think you can do this, we'll give you $1 million to try. And that seemed like kind of an interesting proposition. So we got some people together, wrote a proposal, and they gave us $1 million. And we just went from there. So it was a full-size, actually it was a Chevy Tahoe, and it was converted to drive itself completely. It would find its own roads. There's no remote control or anything like that. And the Congress actually has a mandate out about the number of vehicles in the military's forces that will be driving themselves. Doesn't look like they're going to reach their target, but this program was part of an effort to reach those goals.
Well, I and maybe some people listening had a preconception or sort of a preconceived notion about this, that the whole driverless vehicle thing was something about getting us on the beltway with a car that somehow followed a little sensors in the road or something, and it kind of a Disneyland sort of thing, you know, everybody's lined up behind other vehicles. But the DARPA Urban Challenge is totally removed from that. This is basically replacing the driver with a brain.
Yeah, in a way. It's our car was really pretty good in the end. We did well in the competition, and we eventually worked with Google. They're working with some of the technology that we developed now, and continuing on with it. It sort of ended up driving like your son probably would if once you still follow all the rules. The car that drives itself does that again and again. It gets incredibly boring, comes back to the exact same spot every time. But it's looking in the world for itself. It's listening to satellites, and I'm still not convinced that developing those is a good idea, so I'm kind of thinking about that too.
Interesting. Yeah, I was telling Pete before we went on the air that I taught my son to drive recently, and I was telling him to focus on the white stripe, the fog line, on the side of the road rather than the yellow in the middle. And, of course, until recently in Sitka, our fog line was pretty faded and often disappeared, and we'd be driving along, and he'd go, Dad, what do I do now? The stripe is gone. And at some point, your DARPA vehicle must have communicated the same thing within its internal brain. The stripe is gone. What now?
Yeah, and the kind of interesting thing about that is then it just does everything with probability, basically. It says, well, the stripe is gone, or I have a bad measurement about what the stripe does, but I still think I know where I am based on GPS, but I don't usually trust that too much. But I know that I was here at a certain point, and now I'm moving this fast, so I can dead reckon my position. And then it sort of merges all those things, pretty much exactly like what your son would do. Except it doesn't have the advantage of saying, hey, Dad, like, where am I? So for the most part, maybe, let's say, 99.9% of the time, that's good enough. The funny thing is if you drive for 1,000 miles, 99.9% of the time isn't quite enough. So it's remarkable to see how good humans really are at driving. We put around 3,000 autonomous miles on the vehicle while developing it, and we never actually hit anything, although we did. There was one time when a human was driving the car and managed to hit something. So you never know how it's going to work out.
Well, that was the next question. I mean, when a DARPA vehicle does rear end somebody, does it stop and apologize and hand its insurance card?
Yeah, look to Nevada. They've got some new laws in place to establish themselves as the autonomous vehicle testing center of the world. So now in Nevada, I think you'd have to check me on this, but it's legal somehow to get a permit to drive a vehicle with a computer. So be careful.
Interesting. Pete, at some point, do you feel that you'll come to some sort of crossroads in your life where you're going to be, whether it's going to be all about art or all about the engineering? Or are you just sort of pioneering some personal route that you're totally confident, you know, will be fine? I mean, what do you see yourself doing?
No, I definitely see myself making artwork. I'm not so convinced about the engineering work I was doing, and there's a lot of people trying it, so I think it's a good idea to at least have a few people trying a different thing, and maybe making artwork is a good, not like a right or a wrong, but just something it'd be nice to have some people checking into, see how that way of thinking works out for the world, as opposed to the engineering mindset. And having both, a little bit of both, seems all right to me.
And I've been talking about sculpture, but it's not just sculpture. There's other media that interest you as well.
That's true, yeah. I don't really confine myself to a particular way of working because it might not always be right. Kind of like the engineering mindset, you know, that old adage, if you have a hammer, everything's a nail. Well, if you're an engineer, everything's a problem you can solve with engineering. And if you become a photographer, you probably pick up the camera. But if you're kind of open to whatever, then you might pick up the camera, or maybe you need a circular saw that day, or you're not really sure. And it's a really fun way to work because everything is a possibility. Who knows? Maybe I'll go into radio next. This is kind of a cool room you got here.
Okay, bring it on. We're ready. We're always ready for new ideas. Pete Moran is from upstate New York. He's a sculptor, an artist, a photographer, writer, and an engineer. He's one of 8 Sitka fellows who's in Sitka for 7 weeks this summer through August 31st, is it, Pete?
That's right. Yeah.
That's when you got to go back. And after this fellowship, any big plans?
Yeah, I've got some things to think about.
Some things to do. I know you sailed your way around Southeast Alaska getting here.
I did. Yeah, a month and a half from Juneau to Sitka seemed like a good amount of time.
Okay. And maybe you might be developing some plans to sail your way out.
if anyone needs a hand, let me know.
Wouldn't be a bad idea. And again, Pete Moran is one of a Sitka fellow. It's a program on the campus over at Sheldon Jackson. He's one of 8, and he's been my guest this morning on the morning interview. Thanks, Pete, for coming in.
Thank you very much.